Hey, and here I am, Dr. Lisa. It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I give a shit, you know? Thanks for joining us today. I am really excited to be here for like a whole bunch of reasons. Mostly is I'm out of my own house where my dog is sick because we took her for shots at the vet yesterday. And she's a wuss. She's a fucking pussy, my dog, and she hasn't recovered. So it was depressing, and I'm glad to be here. Anyway, before I get started, I want you guys have to come to the Radio Free Brooklyn Family fundraiser rock concert for our fall back to cool fun. I'm not going to read that again, but fundraiser rock concert is what I was not going to read again. But anyway, it's on Saturday, September 10th at 8 p.m. It's got these incredible Brooklyn bands, the Dead Leaf Echo, Falling Birds, Drew Cutler, and the Heart and Hand Band, Amos Rose. I want to tell you on a personal note, like I went to the last fundraiser and it was really seriously one of the wackiest, most awesomest nights of, I really can't say my life because that would be a really long archive, but it was totally, totally memorable. And like, just like weird, like that weird vibe that is really hard, real weird, authentic vibe, hard to find these days. But anyway, not only will you be treated to these great bands, but there will also be DJs, prize giveaways, drinking, dancing, fucking, I just put that in there, and a whole buttload of fun, butt fucking maybe. Proceeds from this event will go towards keeping RFB on the air and defraying some of the costs of our expansion into our new storefront on DeKalb Avenue in Bushwick. The event will be held at the Unit J Loft, 338 Moffett Street, Bushwick. Take the L train to Wilson. You got to be 18 or older. Tickets are $8 in advance, $10 at the door. More information, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/fundraiser. I'm serious, folks. I mean, I am obligated to read most of that, even the improv part I just put in there, but I'm seriously like, this is going to be cool. So we come to our guest. It's time to introduce our guest. guest, we have Evan Leslie Jones.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, man. He's a stand-up comic. And there's something special that I want to tell you is that in honor of Evan, who does a lot of work, what's the name of your TV, your web series?
Oh, Stoner on the Street?
Yeah, Stoner on the Street, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have to have my arm twisted for a good reason to get stoned. So I'm just telling you right now that Evan and I shared a pot cookie about, what was it, 20 minutes ago?
Yeah, probably about maybe slightly
half an
less.
Hour?
Yeah.
Less, more?
Less, more, who knows?
So this is my hope, Evan, that we get more and more stoned as we go.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think that'll happen with the edibles. We'll get more stoned as we go through the day after this also, probably.
Yeah, so stick with us, see what happens. So Evan and I have we met? You look sort of familiar. We might have been in the same room, huh?
I don't think we've met.
But we never met.
Yeah.
Until right now.
Yeah.
So, I avoided talking to Evan and asking him too many things because I wanted to save it all for you. So Evan and I are getting to know each other, or I'm going to interrogate Evan on the air, having really never met him, and why we both continually get more and more stoned. So this is going to be great. I'm really excited.
Oh yeah,
don't you think?
Yeah, we're jumping in.
Okay, so you know, I really like to do some real therapy on the show if we can, but. There's just a few things that, like, when I was watching your stuff and thinking about you, so I just wanted to, like, we have to talk, but, so first of all, your name is Evan Leslie Jones, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Leslie Jones is such a hot topic these days, but why do you use three names?
Well, originally, I was going to go with just Evan Jones, but that was the name of the guy who played Cheddar Bob in 8 Mile. Like, officially, officially on SAG. So I was like, oh, I'll just throw my middle name that has like a ring to it anyway. And a couple years later, I heard Leslie Jones on a WTF podcast.
Oh, yeah, that
was
so
like,
great.
I was like, all right, well, she's a stand-up, but like, you know, hopefully she'll remain at like this medium level so we can both have this name. And then now she's like an A-list celebrity. So it's like, actually at one point people on like, there was these strange, like this one cam girl stripper quoted one of my tweets and tried to like Twitter shame me once. It was very bizarre, but there was these girls that were like, he's just using that so he can bank off Leslie Jones's fame. I was like, what are you talking? Yeah, like I'm getting booked instead of Leslie Jones. They're like, yeah, he's basically the same person. But no, and now it's weird because every time something terrible happens to her because of fucking crazy ass, you know, trolls on the internet, there's some like egg avatar on Twitter will have some joke about like, I'm so sorry, blah blah blah, just happened to you. And if it doesn't make sense to me, I'm like, oh, shit, something happened to Leslie Jones.
Oh, wow.
I'm the first to know because it's my middle name.
But you know what also so weird is, like, just like what happened, like, last night, you know, that somebody, like, hacked her website. I mean, you know all about that, right?
Yeah, I literally found out about it because of a Twitter egg avatar person making a joke about it. And I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? And I started seeing other people's comments about, like, I can't believe they did that. And then I was just, like, looked it up after that and was like, well, fuck.
That's horrible. You know, the FBI is on it, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, not that I, like, trust them to catch them at all.
No, but I mean, at least, the government is, you know, is sticking by her.
Yeah. When it comes to hacking stuff, I think it's also in their interest because they want those people are a danger to them also.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, that's true.
They're like, a cop shot somebody? Yeah, we don't give a fuck.
It's crazy,
that's not a danger,
right?
To us specifically.
Yeah. So anyway, so that is really intense.
Yeah.
What's going on with her. So it's so weird for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's it is slightly. Actually, I tweeted about it once, and she retweeted it, like a joke about having her middle name and getting booked instead of her, and so that was pretty cool. But
so she's aware of you.
I mean, for like a minute a year ago when she retweeted it, but
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, aware enough. Probably, you know, I'm not the first thing on her mind. But
no, but she. Oh yeah, I heard about that. Anyway, that is really funny how that happens.
Yeah, it's fucking really crazy.
Funny. Yeah,
it's crazy that they're going at her this hard. I mean, over like literally, it's like a mix of just the fact that she was in the recreation of a nerd movie, that she's a black woman, and that she had anything to do with that fucking Milo dude getting kicked off of Twitter.
Oh, you know what? It's just so fucked up. It's just, you know, it's just the kind of hate. I mean, people that want to hate, it's not even about what they're hating. They're just like, here's a good chance for me to hate, put out some hate. That's how I see it. Those are like the Trump supporters.
I mean, it's like,
well, it's all coming ahead now, which is cool, because maybe maybe we all will take responsibility for like the fact that those people are living among us, the real haters. You know, that's part of our society. So let's get back to you, Evan Leslie Jones.
All right.
So anyway, let's find out some like just basic shit. So how old are you, Evan? You're a young man.
I'm 26.
26.
Yeah.
And you've been, where'd you go to college?
I went to college for like a semester in Virginia at Old Dominion University. And then I dropped out and came to New York that same year. Yeah, like later that year.
Because to do stand-up?
To do acting stuff.
So were you one of those acting theater kids?
Well, because that was the only acting options in high school and college, I was, but I fucking hated theater. I just hated it.
Why?
I hate it. It's just not fun. The people, a lot of the people involved with it, even though they're super nice, they're too much.
It's a little humorless, isn't it?
It's not that it's humorless. Their brand of humor is not my brand of humor, and like things that theater people are into, I'm not. It's very over the top. It's very like, even off stage, everyone's always like just dancing around and singing and very in your face, and it's just, I'm just like,
no,
I'm not about this.
I hear you. It's a little too, yeah, I know. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Also, just the performance of being in a play is not fun to me. Like, it feels very, I'm like, let's make a fucking movie. Like, this isn't, you know, the 1800s.
So it didn't, but did you do theater? Like
yeah,
you must
I did
have
a lot because, I did it in high school. Like, I started in, like, seventh or, I did, like.
Can you sing?
I did a singing training and lessons, yeah.
That's, you had singing lessons?
Yeah, a lot of them.
And so you can sing well. That's the whole problem. That's how you wind up in theater.
Oh, yeah.
It's like kids that draw well wind up in art.
Well, actually, I wasn't a good singer, but I wanted to be a singer more than an actor. And so I was in a death metal band in high school.
Oh, cool.
And I would just scream and growl and stuff. And then once I got to New York, I started taking singing lessons from this guy, Breck Allen, who was fucking amazing, and I like learned how to sing, and almost it was like that. At one point, I quit comedy and was just doing like martial arts and singing for almost a year.
That's weird.
And then singing got me. I did musical improv just because it was like a thing connected to comedy with music, and then like slowly got back into grinding open mics and stand up.
So do you have? So. Can you sing us like two lines from a musical theater song, and then we can move on from this, please?
I don't know any musical theater at all.
You don't?
How about
a Beatles song? How about, like, Yesterday?
I just
want to hear your voice. Come on.
I haven't sang in years. It's
okay,
been so
that's
long.
Why you have to do it.
Oh, man.
Come on, I got you high. I got you
all
high,
right.
Evan.
The song I got best at singing during my lessons was the Stone Sour song, Bother.
Okay.
So I guess I'll try and sing that with no instruments. Man, I get so self-conscious about singing.
Really? This is so awesome. Yeah. This is great. Okay. Right. I'm with you. I'm gonna clap. This is all everyone out there in Radioland supporting you.
All right.
Yay, Evan! We wanna hear this. Yay! Thank you,
chorus,
Evan.
I guess. You don't need to bother. Man, it's so bad. Sorry, I'm so off. I can't do this right
now.
I'm sorry.
I like that, though.
That was terrible.
Oh, I could see a little Justin Bieber in there.
No.
That was great. Thank you.
Oh,
okay,
thanks.
So let's imagine what it's like to be your parents. Where did you grow up?
I was born in California, and then when I was 11, I moved to Germany and was there from like 11 to 17. And at 17, I moved back to Virginia for like a year and then came to New York.
Mm-hmm. Do you have sisters or brothers?
No, I'm an only child.
And what do your parents do?
My mom works in preschools on military bases, so she's like a civilian working for the military. Mm-hmm. And then my dad was like a stay-at-home dad that like cooked and cleaned and stuff. And then when I was 21 or 2, my parents got divorced, and so he's just like temping now. He like moved to Hawaii because the rest of his family's there.
Mm.
And so he's just like temping. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing job-wise.
Are you in touch with him?
Yeah.
So did your parents get along when you were growing up?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, as much as any.
But it sounds a little bit like an unusual dynamic, no? Meaning like you had a, you know, stay-at-home dad and your mom. I mean, it's unusual to work on army bases, right? I mean, like.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It just sounds fucking freaky to me. That's all.
Well, I'm really normal. We weren't like living on the army bases ever. Even in Germany, we were living off. So it's like my dad wasn't around military people or like involved with any of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was just a civilian. So it was more just like she would go to work.
But I mean, like, it's really unusual to have a stay-at-home dad all those years, no?
Not really. I mean, he was better at cleaning and cooking and stuff than her.
Yeah.
So it just kind of made sense.
Did it seem normal? Weren't your parents worried about money, though? Didn't they want him to go to work?
I mean, no. My mom made enough, and they thought it was more valuable to have a parent at home taking care of a kid than having two parents working.
Whoa. That sounds really ideal.
I mean,
idealized.
It makes more sense. It's not like we never lived extravagant lives ever.
Right.
So it's not like we needed this income of money. Like, we didn't have cable or like a CD player until I was 10 or like a computer. There was I didn't have like video games to buy really until I was 11. I mean, I had like an allowance. I would get my own video games eventually, but
So did you have less than your friends, or was that
way less?
So
Especially in California.
How was that? Was that weird? Or how did that make you feel is really what the shrink would say.
How did it make me feel? I felt poorer than kids. Just, I like wanted, I had no connection to pop culture because I had no cable or older siblings or like modern music. And so I felt like very disconnected socially. And then also I have like a bunch of learning disabilities. So I've been in special ed since like third grade. So it's like, I'm disconnected in the classroom from what, how, the way you're supposed to learn. And I'm also disconnected socially. So definitely like very much an outsider.
But didn't you ever think, like, I wish Dad would get a job so I can get the damn CD player?
I guess, but then I saw kids whose both of their parents worked, and, like, their parents were never around.
So you were conscious of, like, that it was a trade-off and you were happy with that?
Yeah, just because my parents were such good and supportive parents in general all the time.
So I recognized, really close with them.
Yeah.
That's cool. You must have been upset when they split up, huh?
No, because at that point I was in the, like, my dad really didn't become frustrating until after I graduated high school, and he sort of went into that psychological state of the, that moms go into when they feel like, but it's like a mix of that plus a mix of like masculinity, I think, maybe.
Wow.
Like, I've been out of work so long I can't get a job with enough money for it. He didn't have a college degree. And then also it's like, it's a mix of that plus he doesn't have the kid there that was like his responsibility.
So interesting. You know, that makes so much sense, because women go through that all the time, and it would make so much sense. It's so interesting.
It's like, mix that with like masculine pride, and it becomes almost
doubled. That's interesting. He had some masculine pride in there.
I think
that,
so. Whether
that
he
is
wants
really
to admit
interesting.
Or not. But yeah.
So so that, you know, I give your dad a big shout out for like being like really cool about playing the domestic
and he
partner
was good
role. I
at
love
that.
That.
Like really
and
good.
And he
at
was
that.
Really good at it. He's not a lazy guy.
Not in that regard.
Because it sounds lazy. I picture housewives sitting around eating bonbons. It does. It just fucking does.
He, unless he's depressed.
And that's so judgmental of me, too. And, you know, wrong. Wrong and judgmental. I'm just being honest.
It's just, he, when it comes to, like, achieve, he's, like, got, like, a fear of success kind of laziness. So when it comes to, like, achieving a thing that would push him forward towards a thing he's dreamt about, or if he's working at, like, a job, he'll work really hard at the job, but then he'll do something purposely to get himself fired or just quit for no reason. So it's, like, it's not laziness as much as self-sabotage.
Right.
And then if he gets depressed, he sleeps a lot. Like, he'll just do what he has to do and then sleep or whatever, but...
Mm.
I don't know if I would describe it as laziness necessarily.
Right. So let's talk about your pot smoking, which I just enabled. you have a whole series of videos where you're stoned. Right. So tell us a little bit about that.
Stoner on the Street. My roommate and like comedy partner, Steven Spinola, he was taking a sketch class at UCB. And he just wrote this idea, Stoner on the Street, and everybody in his class thought it was really funny. So it was very simple. So we just do our, it's basically like not a satire, but like, I guess a satire of those Man on the Street segments you'd see. And I get really fucking high and I go out and do Man on the Street. And I look kind of normal and I'm dressed in a suit, except my eyes look really stoned.
You look really stoned.
But I don't look them in the face, so they think they're doing this normal interview, but I keep like forgetting questions and like asking weird weed questions when they're not appropriate. And then they realize I'm high and they're like, oh, what the fuck is going on?
So is part of that fueled by being high, or is part of that fueled like, this is how I'm high, but I'm going to act high?
I get super high, so I have the look anyway, and then I also play it up to a degree just for comedic effect. We have certain beats, and like Stephen will be directing me with certain ideas we had that we thought would be funny, or like questions we thought would be funny. And I just kind of like, I watched a lot of when I was living in Germany, some of the only shows in English on MTV were like Ali G and Borat and stuff. So I kind of watch how Sacha Baron Cohen will like take people's words. He'll like take a segment of the words they're saying in this foreign character and like flip it on him and make him confused and like act like he doesn't understand. So I'll sort of listen and do the same thing and like take bits and segments and like kind of poke people and push their buttons and fuck with them.
That's a great influence.
Yeah.
I just want to remind people that they're listening to Dr. Lisa having a psychoanalytic analytic conversation while they're both high with Evan Leslie Jones on Radio Free Brooklyn. There, I said it. See, I'm so worried because I'm high that I'm going to forget it. That I'll probably say it like three times. I'm supposed to say it three times, but I'll probably say like 20. Anyway, so let's talk about your relationship with marijuana. Like, how much marijuana do you really? I mean, you have a character that's marijuana based, but that could mean anything, right?
I pretty much smoke it from like waking up to going to sleep every day.
So you spend all day every day stoned?
Kind of. I mean, for me, it's I'm at a point with it tolerance wise where like it's mostly just suppressing anxiety and like keeping me in the moment. It's not really like super fucking like recreationally high or like incapacitated.
Ah. But so you feel like you need it.
Yeah.
Need it to be normal.
Or need it
to function in the way.
Yeah, need it to just not be completely scatterbrained and all over the place.
So do you feel like it helps you focus?
A lot, yeah. It helps me with ADD more than anything I've ever tried to help me with my ADD.
Wow. Have you talked to doctors about that?
I had a therapist once him working with me convinced him that medical marijuana was actually a good thing. Like, it changed his mind on the whole idea of it.
Oh, you actually...
Yeah, he's like, you're the first person I've seen that, like, smokes at this level and is, like, a functional person and can use it as, like, an anti-anxiety medication.
So do they worry that there's going to be any physical harm?
No.
You don't think that that it's going to fuck with your head or you think it's completely harmless?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the actual studies that have been done, it's not just harmless. It's like very beneficial in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And how about smoking? Is smoking bad for you? Or you don't smoke enough?
Most of the things that when you smoke a cigarette that are bad for you are added chemicals and things that are in nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really felt negative physical effects from smoking just straight weed.
Oh, you're also 26.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. So of course, as the psychotherapist, I have to ask you if you're an addict. But I mean, that's not even a relevant question. But are you addicted to anything else? Do you drink?
No.
Not at all?
I drink a little bit, but it's just I don't enjoy the feeling of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm addicted. I've had video game addiction in my life, but I'm very good at noticing it and squishing it in the bud.
Mm-hmm.
I'm addicted to comedy in a way that's like unhealthy.
What does that mean?
Like going to mics and like forcing myself to get on stage even when I'm not feeling it, and like letting it control my entire. I mean, I guess it's my career, so it makes sense. But like, I don't work out as much as I used to. And I don't sing anymore. It's like I don't do things that would make me a happier person because I'm forcing myself to do comedy past the point of maybe diminishing returns at some points.
So what? So you're obsessed with being a like what is do you have like what's motivating you? I mean, is there a goal or is there like what do you think is motivating you to be so driven about it?
I guess.
I mean, what do you get out of it, I guess? There's so many different things you could be getting. So.
The only times that I don't have this underlying sense of anxiety is after a good set or after tripping on acid. So it's like it's the only thing that like silences all the questions is doing well. But the percentage that you're able to do well, Not performance-wise necessarily, but that you get a good audience and things line up is, like, you have to keep rolling the dice out there. So, yeah, I guess it's the only thing. And also, it's, like, sort of my only option career-wise I've come to at this point. And, like, the only thing I've ever performance-wise been, like, naturally gifted at. So it's, like, I don't want to squander the one thing that keeps me grounded.
Interesting. So, do you have like a career goal, like as far as what you would like to see happen next, even just next, like write on a TV show, or is there something you're working towards? I think that's the question. Something specific, or
next,
are you just improving your work?
at this point, I need to do something that's going to make it a living. Whether, and I mean, I'm gonna probably have to leave New York for that at some point, but like, I want to be able to work the road enough that I can make like $30,000 a year or something, so or like, yeah, basically making at least half a living off of it would be nice at this point.
So you would like, and we spoke earlier, you cobble together a bunch of other jobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would like to not do
that. That aren't comedy related. But anyway, so the thing is that, so you, like right now you would be happy just being like a road comic driving all over America and doing all that
amazing
weird shit.
That'd be so fucking amazing.
Have you had any gigs or have you gotten some?
I've had, yeah, I've had, me and Steven have done a lot of road work, but nothing. The performances have been shit. Not shit. They've gone from shit to like very valuable, amazing club spots I would have never gotten in New York because the scene is too dense and too cliquey or whatever.
Right.
Too political. Like some of the best shows I've ever had, like packed out clubs all over. I've done like Florida, Dallas, Tennessee, Virginia Beach, Connecticut. So like all over the East Coast and some in the South. But yeah, they've been amazing. But then the money is never there. Like we either are breaking even or losing money every time. So it's like I'd like to be able to actually do that and make a living with that.
Sounds real.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds – and you're young, you know. And TV. You've been doing comedy since 09, you said?
Yeah.
And you have a partner, right?
Yeah.
That's really helpful, right?
Yeah, it's been super beneficial. I mean, if it wasn't for him coming in, I wouldn't have gotten any of the road work. He started in Canada and did it. He made a lot. He got in a car crash and, like, got a big insurance settlement and used the money to, like, sort of bolster his ability to tour and, like, do these DIY tours and buy equipment and stuff. And so he had gone out and made these connections. And I had been in New York for years and years just grinding open mics to not much avail. Like, I wasn't socially popular. I wasn't – people didn't want to hear what I had to say, really. And so he came and he really liked my shit. And so we became friends and then roommates. And so he started taking me on the road. And it really – he took me to – oh, I did Montreal. I did Just for Laughs with him. It's like this –
really?
Yeah. And
did he do just – did he get booked? Did you both get booked or did you just go there? Or?
We
– under what capacity, Evan?
We got booked for – there was Just for Laughs and then I don't think they do it anymore. But they had a branch of Just for Laughs called Zoo Fest with like crazier themed shows. And so we just did the Canna Boys. He did half an hour.
Oh, Canna Boys. Yeah. Is he part of that with you?
Yeah. He's the other Canna Boy.
Canna Boys.
So he opened, he did half an hour and then I did like 45 to an hour headlining spot.
Wow.
And we just did that for the last week of.
And it went well?
It was, the crowds were sparse, but it was fun.
Like any festival, it's hard.
It was, every time we've gone to Montreal, though, they've just been so good and put me up at clubs, and Montreal, Canadian audiences are better at listening and absorbing comedy than American audiences, so they appreciate my style, I think, a lot more than, a lot of New York audiences. Right. But.
So, okay, so, I get the picture. I get the picture, Evan. So let's talk about something that is on your mind. What is on your mind lately? Let's think about that.
Like leaving New York, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're thinking, is that something you're thinking about doing?
Yeah, I put, like, so much in to build a reputation here. And every time I feel like I'm putting a lot in and not getting much back out of it. Like, the shows are great, but then when it comes to, like, actually getting booked on real club spots or any kind of recognition from industry or it's not happening. And, like, the clubs have – I have zero club heat other than, like, the roast I've been doing at the Stand. You know, no one's interested in my set. No one's interested – they're not even that they're not interested in my style, it's that they don't even want to hear it because it's another straight 20-something white guy. They're like, we don't need another one of you. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't know my perspective or where I'm going to come from in this at all.
So do you think part of that, it sounds like politics.
It's a mix of that I'm not the most social guy. I don't drink a lot, so I'm not like getting fucked up with everyone.
There's a lot of drinking, right?
I mean, I hang out with the potheads, but that isn't going to get you booked like getting drunk with someone will, you know? I mean, I'm doing better at that, but yeah, I'm not the most social person. I have a lot of social anxiety, especially around people I admire as comics, so mm-hmm. it makes for a lot of weird interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I started here, so there's certain people who have known me since I was terrible, and I've gone through so many different personas and styles that I think there's a lot of baggage about who people think I am or who they want me to be in their head. And I can't really shake that in a lot of regards.
So they already like saw you like 9 years and they're like, oh, that wasn't very good because you were like beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and they're like, I'm not going back to that.
Yeah, and
oh, that's fucked up. But you know what? I mean, yeah. I'm in enough creative communities to know that.
But I mean, you hear on
but
podcasts.
But you know what? I'm good. Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, maybe I'm getting a little more stoned, but I'm gonna say like. I have a really good feeling. I get a really good sense of you. I want you to know that I really like you. I want you to trust me.
Yeah.
But you present in a way that is not friendly. And I'm going to say that. And I don't even say unfriendly. And I'm not even going to say, I mean, you were kind of friendly to me. But you can't, no one, like, I can't, no one cannot be friendly to me because I am friendly to people that hate me. And don't want me to. I used to have this guy, my neighbor, that hated me because I had a dog for 2 days, and he wouldn't look at me in the street, and I would just yell, "Hi, John! Hi!"
Yeah.
So, but you know what it is? I did feel like I had to work a little bit to make you feel comfortable in the beginning, like before we got on the air.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in my head that. That this guy, I mean, I saw your work and I was like, he's smart. You know, I was like, I'm glad to have this guy on, believe me. But I was just like, oh, he's a little bit of a freak. You know what I mean? He's not going to be like chill immediately.
Well, I mean, especially before I do anything that's like podcast or stand up, I'm very much in my head. That's like peak anxiety mode. So I'm just like, trying to filter through my own anxiety in my head.
I figured. Yeah. And also, I mean, you can't imagine the array of people I have here or even the array of people involved in the station.
Yeah.
Freaks are my life. I'm one of them.
Yeah, I mean, so interactions with me are going to vary drastically pre-show or pre-podcast and then post-show and post-podcast.
But you know what else? I'm going to tell you this, too.
Yeah.
Is that... I mean, you know, it's funny because I had it in my notes that I was going to ask you about Aaron Glazer, and then I had like a bunch of things, and I was like, maybe this is something we'll talk about. So I immediately, like, the way, like, my most superficial impression of you is I would put you in that white guy, Bernie Bro category.
Yeah, everyone would. And, they all do when they see the,
And but that's a problem. Is that a problem?
It's probably one of the biggest problems I face is like people immediately when I get on stage, people are expecting. I think they're expecting like either like Dane Cook-y shit to come out of me, or they're expecting like Daniel Tosh type, like very edgy racial jab, and not to downplay either of those guys, but like.
No. But
they expect like bro-y, like, and then she fucking suck my dick, or they expect me to be like, you know, like pushing people's buttons on purpose. And then when I get up there and I talk about like, you know, universal love, or like I take shots at, you know, the prison industrial complex or something, or I'm just like very weird. People, it's like jarring for people.
Right, right. So what I'm saying is like when I first my very, very first impression of you was like I was going to ask you. I mean, I work on instinct, but I was thinking, oh, this guy is going to have something really horrible. Something he's going to stand up for Aaron Glazer. We can have a big fight. It'll be fun. But then I realized after I spoke to you for a while that like, I mean, I didn't like think about it consciously, but I just skipped over it. So what I'm saying is. That particularly when I heard you talk about your father right now and his role in your family, like people, and also that you didn't have money growing up and you sacrificed, you know, you had a dad instead of a CD player. Like people don't get that about you.
No, they see upper middle class, like suburb guy. They think I'm like college educated, like, I don't know.
they, yeah, no, they think you're something that you're not. So why don't you deal with that? Why don't you, like, change your look? Or, I mean, I think it's hurting you. That's me.
This is the most accessible look I've had so far.
Why? Let me look at you. Wait, I can't even really see you. We got this.
Especially with, like, the facial hair and the curly hair. It's like people are the most open to listening to what I have to say when I look like this. I've done experiments, actually. I did a commercial where I was, like, clean-shaven and in a suit. And so I just went straight from the commercial to open mics to, like, see how my jokes would go over as a clean-cut guy in a suit. And that's the first time people were like, fuck this guy. To, like, to literally to my face you from need- the audience.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're so wrong.
Yeah.
Also, I love how devoted you are to your work. I mean, I'm always for that. Although, although I do want to ask you about girls, because I have a feeling they're getting the short end of the stick on this. So what I'm saying is that, you know, it'd be really interesting. Have you thought of this? Getting an actor that you cast, a friend or somebody who has, like, the image that you think people would respond to, and have them do your set.
Yeah.
Have you done it or thought about it?
No, because my set is so much about...
You couldn't do it.
It's like a very specific style with, like, very specific timing. And so, like, some of the jokes are written in a way that they would work, but other ones he wouldn't be able to pull it off.
Mm.
And I almost write more like that now anyway, because then no one can steal from me. So it's like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. So, yeah, I don't know. It seems like the clothes, but maybe you're right. It's your vibe.
I purposefully lost a lot of muscle over the time that I've been doing stand-up, and it had to do with getting cast because I look kind of nerdy in the face more than I look muscular. So I stopped I was like bodybuilding almost at one point, and I stopped lifting to that degree. I like stopped martial arts stuff.
Glasses. Eyeglasses, fake eyeglasses. I did that once when I had a job in advertising because I felt like I wasn't being taken seriously.
Yeah, I had real ones, but the problem is that people fucking hate hipsters. And immediately you put glasses on me, they go from either calling me a bro to calling me a hipster, which I'm also not at all. Like, I don't.
How about dyeing your hair? Have you thought of that?
I've thought about dyeing a portion of it blue once, just because I thought it'd be cool if, like, I had a bunch of fans that also dyed their hair blue, but that's like a future weird dream of mine.
You know what? I have really good friends that are hairdressers or own a salon.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pick Thorn. They're great. We've talked about them on the air all the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to send them a photo of you and ask for their opinion, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to report back because I have a feeling... Yeah, I don't know. But you know what's weird is I don't want you to forget that, like... It's like a weird quirk of your superficial appearance that's making it harder for you, not the actual skills.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like the most frustrating wall I've run into for literally the entire time I've
been
doing this.
But you're a performer. And also, I mean, you're a cute young man. It's not like you're bad looking, you know what I mean?
Not necessarily.
That would be easier if you were, right?
Yeah, it's
if
weird.
If you were really unattractive, you'd be in there.
Being slightly good looking to really good looking in stand up is, as a dude especially, I think maybe as a woman also, but
it's good and bad. And it has different obstacles.
Not when it comes to getting booked. When it comes to getting booked, though, I think it's a bad thing. And I think also relating to other stand up comics is a bad thing because they think that you've lived that life, you know?
Right, people. That's your vibe, though. It's weird. That's your crust to bear. So you're only 26. You get past it. So I want to say again that I want to remind people that I'm really high now, by the way. So they're listening to me. Are you high from that?
Yeah, I feel it. I feel it like in my body.
Okay, he feels it for somebody who's like a really hardcore stoner. I'm pretty good competition for any stoner.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Dr. Lisa gives a shit, and I'm having a really stoned psychological therapy conversation with my good friend, my now good friend, Evan Leslie Jones. So let me ask you this. So you're thinking about leaving New York. I could see that to kind of, because it might help your work, right? Where people aren't going to put you in that category. Like if you...
Well, it would just be more that like all the baggage I have of being here if literally the only people in LA that know me are comics who follow me on Twitter, and I have like really big.
Yeah, you've got a huge following. How's that? Because you're probably a good writer.
It was the course of I found a way to get followers mm-hmm. on Twitter, and I just continued to grind that over the mm-hmm. course of years, and then also that I just put out so much content that's good so often. It's like you can get people easily, but to keep them, you have to have the mm-hmm. content. Mm-hmm. And I think also comics will use Twitter to upload just one-liners, which is great, but I am cultivating a specific character and personality on Twitter. Like, I'll say things that aren't necessarily jokes, but that develop the persona that I have on Twitter, and I think people really connect to that aspect of it. Almost more than the jokes themselves.
Mm. So girls, let's ask you about girls. So I this is my fear for you, Evan. My fear for you is that you're so focused on your comedy that you're not meeting any girls.
I've always had trouble meeting, like I get a lot of anxiety, especially around women I'm attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also was not good looking for a large portion of my life mm-hmm. when I was younger. So that was always like a huge, huge depressing point for me.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2000, and then I dated a very like abusive, negative improviser girl mm-hmm. for about three and a half years and from like 21 to 23. But then after I broke up with her, I was also, my dad was sleeping on a cot in the living room of my tiny one bedroom apartment that we were both living in. So that didn't help the situation either. But,
wow, that's fucked up. Sorry, Dad.
But in 2014, I started to date more casually, and it started to open up for me a bit. And
mm-hmm.
This girl I was seeing, she was leaving for England, and mm-hmm. she's a stand-up comic also. And Rebecca, the lady who runs the Creek in the Cave, was like,
right.
"You should do a naked show as your last show before you go." And she was like, "I don't know," because she was like known for just being body positive and getting naked and like doing crazy shit. And uh-huh.
Rebecca, or your girlfriend?
The girl I was seeing.
What's her? Can you say her name?
Yeah, her name is Abigailia.
Abigail.
That's a stage name.
Uh-huh. Abigailia.
Yeah, huh. It's like the only Abigailia in the world. So okay. If you look it up, you'll probably
right.
And we weren't like we'd only been like kind of hooking up for like a month. It wasn't like any sort of dating deep, but we were like mm-hmm. friends, and then we started hooking up, and she was moving, so we're like, we'll just keep
so,
it.
So Abigailia, what, do a naked show, Rebecca says.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, if you do it, I'll definitely do it. And we did it, and it was the first thing I ever really did in the New York scene that people, like, my set, I was the first person to go up. It was mm-hmm. all about being naked. It, like, crushed in front of the biggest crowd I had performed wow. in front of at that point. Like, everyone in the scene was there.
Wow.
And I knew they would be there, and that's why I focused wow. on making the set so good.
So cool.
And that opened me up as a comic. People started, like, finally staying around at mics and, like, paying attention to my sets. But also, it, like, sort of, everyone was talking about my body being really nice and me having, like, a really big dick. And so that became a thing.
Oh, really?
And it was, yeah. And
then tell me now?
And so then all of a sudden, everyone is seeing me as this guy that just fucks everybody. Like, it made it way easier to meet girls and hook up with people. But I wasn't
That's
fucking
so
everybody.
Funny, though. Don't you find that hilarious?
Yeah.
That's what would happen to a woman.
It was very weird. It was like a simulation.
Your dad. You know, it's so weird. Your dad has such a weird example. I mean, I don't know your dad. I don't even really know you.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just saying, to have that as a role model must be part of the reason you present oddly.
Because
you have a weird example of masculinity, even though you yeah. look pretty masculine, I guess.
Yeah, people
saying.
Expect
yeah,
me to give a
yeah,
shit about
so
a lot of stuff I don't
yeah,
give
that's
a shit
weird.
About.
Okay.
So it was like what people, and because I was so aloof for so long, people kind of projected who they wanted me to be onto me anyway.
Oh, that's great.
And so at that point, they just used that as like confirmation bias, like this guy is getting laid. And like, I usually just end up dating girls that it goes from casual to turning into long-term relationships. I'm not really like this crazy fucking fiend, especially compared to
That's so weird. weird. So you mean all of a sudden, like one day you had all these like chicks?
Yeah.
Like, you, like what was that like? Because you were naked. That is so freaky. Come on.
It was like a simulation of what it must feel like to get famous overnight or something. It only lasted really heavily for a month, and then it
But I mean also because like all of a sudden like you you saw yourself as like, you know, like a wallflower with girls or something. Now all of a sudden you're a stud. Like what was
very,
that like?
It was very
how did you handle that?
I couldn't really. I was like trying to express to people that I was like shocked and excited, but it sounded like bragging sometimes. And like a lot of comics are so self-conscious about not getting laid that they were just like, fuck this dude. Like they already saw me as this like weird, aloof guy who would come to open mics. And like I wouldn't try and impress anyone at open mics.
Oh, you're everybody's worst nightmare.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people use it as a reason to like, it pushed me forward, but also held me back because it made the reputation of how I look more connected in people's minds. And it's so funny because people would be like, talk about me like I'm this like dude who just fucks everyone and gets laid. But I'm like, you all fuck each other so much more than me, guys and girls.
Yeah.
Every single comic, especially the ones that I've heard or that have come up to me like I am like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like you've fucked so many more comics than me. Like you're all full of shit. It's
mean women say that too, or men?
Women
or
and men, both. And both of them, I would say, have fucked more comics than me. It's a very sex positive community for the most part.
So the people who like to fuck comics are probably more the comic fuckers. That's what they are, right? comic fuckers.
Yeah,
are probably more conscious of other people fucking or not fucking comics than average, right?
And
than the average non fucking comic.
For
okay.
I don't know. I think everyone is pretty up in most people's business. But also it's because there was a point in comedy where I distinctively decided not to talk about sex or dating because everyone else was talking about it.
Right.
And because I purposely didn't talk about it, all anyone wanted to know about my personal life is like, who's he fucking? He must be fucking this person, that person. So because I'm not talking about it, they just projected whatever they wanted onto that also. And I never really dispelled the rumors that I was that guy because I thought it was kind of funny.
Right.
And that got people talking, so I was that guy for a little while, but I think now that I'm becoming more open as myself on stage and just better socially, people are realizing that that was a projection of what they thought I was. At least I hope, because there was even bookers and like people that could really make a difference in my career that had this perception of me as like this fucking Casanova fucks everybody.
Yeah, so. You know, it's so weird, isn't it? That I like, but like my impression of you was this guy who looked like a nice boy. Sorry, I have to do that. Otherwise, otherwise I will be flirting with you and I could do that too. But
Whatever works.
But I'm not going to because it's not in my dynamic. I had a musician in here about your age, though. I you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So my impression of you is that you're just, you know, a nice guy and probably has trouble asking girls out. You know, I didn't think of you as a stud muffin at all. I thought of you as kind of the opposite, maybe. You know, like a nice guy, no game. I picture you having no game with girls.
I don't, and I still don't, but there's just, I don't know. It must be a mix of, like, knowing that I'm good at an art, finally, with stand-up or something, but, like, it doesn't matter anymore. I mean, I'm dating someone right now.
So
but
do you have a girlfriend or is it just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have a girlfriend. That's good.
I mean, I'm usually the relationship... Not that I even like relationships necessarily, but I end up in them and I'm good at them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's even weirder to me that I would have this reputation of like the guy that fucks all these people.
Because
it's like you couldn't name any group of people or like girl that I fucked that didn't kind of date for at least a couple months, you know?
but yeah, no, I hear you. That's what my impression of you not knowing you is. That's what I'm saying. So, but the thing that's really weird is that must affect you, like to be seen in that way.
Yeah.
Like, what does that make you think? Like, you are really misperceived a lot, I guess.
I mean,
well, I guess those things are also connected. The reason that you're misperceived with your sexuality and misperceived about whatever else, right?
It's just I've been misperceived in various ways my entire life to the point that it's like I don't fucking care. It's like just it's almost cool. Like it's almost cool to have a part of it being a blank slate where people just project their insecurities about me onto me, whether it works out negatively. And also because the industry has given so little of a shit about me, whether I'm an actor or a singer or a comic, that like I'm also an outsider when it comes to making opportunities and career moves for myself, that I almost feel like free not having to give a fuck. Like, go ahead and project whatever you want.
Oh, I don't have to
like
good.
I don't have to prove to you who I am. Like, just I'm whoever you need me to be in your head, you know?
Right. But I wonder if some of that is also very motivating for you. You know what I mean? I mean, I wonder if some of that is like, oh, these people. I wonder if you can, if you, you probably use that in some way.
I'm like very, I'm like unhealthily driven by negativity, I'd say. I positivity to a huge degree, but like when people shit on me or like under, fucking, what's the word? Like under, fuck, why can't I think of this word?
Because you're high.
When people underestimate me, that's it. It's,
yeah, it pisses you off, right?
Yeah, I get like I get in like super aggressive production mode, or like when someone critiques me, I'll either like lean into the critique and make that thing good, or I'll like compensate for it in such a huge way that it like changes my style and opens me up, as an artist.
You know what? I'm kind of like identifying with you in a lot of ways from what you're saying. It's occurring to me also because I'm high, but also, no, but you know what? Like we were talking a little bit before, like you have learning disabilities, right?
Yeah.
Like what, like dyslexia? And
dyslexia, processing problems. So like reading comprehension, writing comprehension, like spelling stuff, short-term memory. Mm-hmm. Problems, time perception problems, and like scheduling, and
so does getting high help that?
Yeah,
it actually makes it better.
It helps all of it except for the short term memory.
Right.
That's the only. But I mean, to quell. Also, on top of learning disabilities, I have you know, fairly severe anxiety. Mm-hmm. I think my dad has depression and my mom has almost more manic anxiety. So I kind of fall between that on some level. Mm-hmm. And so to keep that at bay is worth the short-term memory loss.
Right. I hear you. But short-term memory. So, but I was going to say that I think that I have some of that, you know, dyslexia or whatever. But because when I was growing up, everybody thought I was stupid.
Yeah.
Including my own family.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people thought I was very...
very, very unusually stupid. And then I would be really worried that I was never going to... I thought I was going to be like a homeless person because I thought I wound up believing I was stupid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big thing.
But your parents like you.
They understood all the learning disabilities stuff and like pushed harder than the schools did in that regard. So like I'm really lucky in that sense. Like I don't think I would have had the wherewithal to recognize that school wasn't for me and like drop out and do stand up and like not get in that student loan debt and like not. It's like I started special ed in third grade, so like I saw how bullshit school was so early that I kind of – I made my plan to escape normal society very young.
You know what? You know what, Evan? I'm going to give you like a really good grade in mental health. I think
– oh, thank you.
Yeah. You know
– acid helps.
No. But I think that like, you know, you have a really good sense of what you need to do, and you're also really motivated, and you also have a relationship with a female.
Yeah.
And I think that's really healthy. So I'm giving a really good grade, and I think that I think you've got some obstacles which will make you a better artist, right?
Yeah.
You're dealing with those obstacles. I'll predict that you could have that TV, you know, half hour, maybe a Comedy Central half hour. What, I'm, like 5 years?
I'm also...
What are we giving it, five? You got to be patient. Might be five.
I'm thinking I keep landing about 1 year behind my predictions, maybe two, in a lot of like career moves, whether they happen the way I want them to or not, like my goals. So probably around like year 13 of my career, I'd say, for the full hour. But I'd like to record one early. I'm like much better long form. I don't get a lot of opportunities to do full half hour, hour sets in New York. But
so people think you're a lot sadder and less confident than you are. I think that which then throws them off.
It's weird.
So it gives you a lot of power.
Because
they underestimate you, and then you get the power.
Yeah.
And then you're angry at them, so you can use that power. So you're being fucking manipulative asshole now.
I call it like black magic because like the negativity can fuel you to a degree, but it'll consume you eventually. So I try and like use just enough black magic to push myself forward, not enough to get like consumed in hate and bitter.
Okay, we only have 4 minutes, so I'm just gonna say, Evan, I think your secrets are out. You're not gonna be able to play this game with everybody anymore. What do you think? I think it's over for you.
I don't know. I think they'll keep projecting whatever they want onto
me. Yeah, I guess so. So let's make sure that we promote whatever crap. No. We have to promote whatever you need to promote.
All right. September 6th, I'm on Roastmasters at the Stand Comedy Club at 10:30. I don't have a date for it yet, but I do a comedy show called The Only One Tripping where all the comics are on LSD or shrooms. And it's super conceptual, got a lot of videos and props and stuff. I don't give away the venue for that, but just...
Is it secret or something?
Sort of. It's semi-secret because of gray areas with being on hallucinogens. I don't know. The venue owner's keep it somewhat anonymous.
I think that's smart.
But yeah, at Aphrodisiac or Evan Leslie Jones on Twitter.
Yeah, or check out my Facebook page where I've written all the shit about him anyway.
But keep an ear to the ground for that, for the next The Only One Tripping.
And you have video of that, I think, online, right?
I do have a lot of video, but not uploaded yet. That is still – I'm saving that for like a big documentary.
He's got a lot of – the documentary.
I'm going to put together a documentary about the show at some point.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. So and I want to remind you guys again – to definitely look how much fun we had, huh? Wasn't it great?
Oh yeah.
So you definitely don't want to miss the fundraiser then, right? The Radio Free Brooklyn family fundraiser on September 10th. And it's going to be at Unit J Loft, 338 Moffett Street. And it's going to be really cool bands like Dead Leaf Echo, Falling Birds, Drew Cutler and the Heart and Hand Band, Amos Rose. You know, Evan, this station is known a lot for music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing to do with music directly, but it is known for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I heard they were playing the 50s.
The 50s?
Or like popular 50 years ago or whatever.
That's Jim.
Yeah, that's cool.
Jim Malone. Great show. Great host. So look, we're almost out of time. I'm trying to bring this in on time. Let's say goodbye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. you have to sing the way out. We've got 20 seconds left.
All right, let's see if I can actually hit the notes on bother again.
Okay, come on. We got 30 seconds.
You don't need to bother. I don't need to be. That was way better.
Hey, yeah, you could practice. I'll get you a spot on one of the music shows.
Oh,
here.
Man,
we'll
revive
your career.
Hell yeah. Start a band. I'd love to do that.
Well, come to the fundraiser. There'll be lots of bands. Okay, folks, that's it. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about